Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of CAF Chats. I'm Major Dustin Morgan and I'm joined today by
Major Alex Altimus.
Today we're going to discuss the opinion, the fractured opinion of United States versus Green Watson, a case that was decided on March 11, 2025. So why don't you tell us about what's going on here? What are the facts?
So this case is involving the admittance of evidence. So the facts are important in this and in terms of the timing as well. So in September of 2020, the appellant was at home with his wife and their three-month-old son. His wife left the house, and when she returned, she went into her son's room and found the appellant holding the son with a washcloth over the son's mouth. She attempted to stop that from happening, and the appellant raised the child and started to shake him and threatened her and said, "If you come near me again, I'm going to throw him." She testified that she managed to get the baby from him finally. He swung at her a few times, hit the baby, and pushed her to the ground. She remained on the ground, and when she was finally able to get up with the baby, she ran downstairs, picked up her phone, and began recording. During the recording, the accused made several threatening statements, including, "I don't give explicit, and if he did, then I'd be happy," talking about if he had killed the child. He then says, "After you leave that door, if it's not with the police, it's in your best interest if you wish to continue breathing and trying to live a life to not come back through that door." So essentially very threatening messages, statements to his wife. She called 911, and while waiting for 911, the accused also called 911 and had a very different explanation of what happened in the house. He was charged with an assault and communicating a threat in violation of Article 128 and 115 of the UCMJ. It's interesting, there is no domestic violence charge here. He was subject to a no-contact order that was only in effect for a month. After the expiration of that no-contact order, he moved back into the home with his wife and his son. And then fast forward 17 months in February of 2022, approximately 3 weeks before the court-martial was scheduled to begin, the government provided notice of intent to admit evidence of uncharged acts that allegedly occurred on or after February 6, 2022, so just days earlier. The government sought to admit the following uncharged acts pursuant to MRE 404B. Essentially, there are seven allegations that really go to domestic violence acts by the accused, as he physically assaulted her, that he balled up his fists and acted like he was going to hit her, that he prevented her from leaving the house, that he told her he was going to put a bullet in her back, that he took all the money from the bank account, that he shut off the utilities to the home, and that he had taken her credit cards and her car keys following arguments. The government noticed this with the intent of consciousness of guilt, as well as common plan or scheme to control his wife. After receiving the notice, the defense filed a motion to preclude admission of this evidence, arguing essentially under the Reynolds test that there was no evidence that the uncharged acts occurred. But even if they did, they alleged that the appellant attempting to control her 17 months after the charged offenses does not make it more or less likely that he suffocated his son or that he threatened to assault his wife. There was, according to the defense, there was low probative value and that there was a very high danger of unfair prejudice, that they would make essentially a propensity determination. The military judge denied the defense motion and ruled the government could introduce the uncharged acts. It's important to note here that this was a military judge alone case, but the judge found that there wasn't sufficient evidence to show that the acts reasonably could have occurred, including a police statement, stipulation of expected testimony of the wife, and the wife's statements to the police at the time. The military judge found that the evidence was not admissible for conscious of guilt, because the domestic dispute occurred 17 months after the charged misconduct and that a consciousness of guilt of having committed the charged misconduct was not more likely in this situation. However, the judge did let it in under the intent of a common plan or scheme to control his wife and undermine any attempts that she made to report him. The military judge concluded very briefly that the probative value of the evidence was not outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice or any other factor listed in MRE 403. He ruled that the uncharged acts were admissible under 404B and emphasized that they would only be used for the limited purpose that it may establish a common scheme or plan and not for reasons prohibited by MRE 404A or for propensity purposes.
Okay, so we're here because he was obviously convicted and the AFCA affirmed this case originally, finding no error on the part of the judge there. What issue CAF certified is whether the Air Force Court erred in affirming the military judge's decision to admit evidence of domestic violence occurring 17 months after the charged offense to show a common scheme or plan under Military Rule of Evidence 404B using a different rationale than the military judge. So ultimately, what we have here is a question under Military Rule of Evidence 404. It's a unique rule of evidence. It talks about whether or not you can bring other acts of the accused in for some sort of purpose. 404A is pretty clear that you cannot bring evidence in to show that the accused has a propensity to commit misconduct. So for those that aren't familiar with this, it basically means like you're a bad person, you do bad things. So it's pretty easy to see like if they had brought these seven things that you talked about in and be like, hey, the appellant here did all these bad things. So it's pretty obvious he's guilty of the underlying offenses. That's prohibited. What 404B does allows you to bring those other acts in for a non-propensity purpose. And if you think back to law school, for those of you that took evidence, I learned mimic at least, like for the non-propensity purposes. I don't remember what mimic means. So it's like motive, intent, modus operandi, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember what I and C are, but I remember having to memorize it for the bar. But it's stuff that's not propensity. And that's what I think about it now is how am I going to get in for a non-propensity purpose? Here, it looks like the trial counsel during the contested trial had it for two reasons. They tried to get under for consciousness of guilt or for common plan or scheme. Here, to control his spouse and prevent her from reporting the misconduct that he allegedly committed to the authorities. And that's what eventually the military judge gets it in for. So the CAF is reviewing that decision for an abuse of discretion. So for the listeners that have this opinion in hand and have read it before and are looking for a way to digest it, you have to be careful with this one. Because if you read the heading at the beginning, it will say that Judge Johnson only delivers the opinion of the court as to part 3B. So 3B is the prejudice analysis. I'm going to go through the 404 analysis. That's 3A. But only Judge Johnson and Judge Sparks sign onto that portion of the opinion. So this is not binding precedent on the military going forward. So this is just, it's not advisory. It's just persuasive for that purpose. The case law that existed before is what you need to look for common plan or scheme. And here, Judge Johnson, writing for part 3A, talks about whether or not it was error to admit this for this common plan or scheme. And she says, in her opinion, the existence of a common plan or scheme by appellant to intimidate the victim from reporting his threatening behavior makes it more likely that his communication was wrongful because it indicates his communications were not in jest or idle banter. So what she's doing here is analyzing the Reynolds factors when it comes to what the charged offenses are.
And Dustin, this is where the appellant is arguing that the court did not connect the conduct to the wrongfulness.
Yep, that's right.
So the AFCA is the first to make that determination or make that connection. And that's what the appellant is saying is incorrect here. And what say you to that?
Yeah. So I think when you're doing this analysis, you have to remember like, hey, it has to be relevant for some purpose, right? You can't just throw misconduct out and you have to show what makes it more likely or not that the underlying charged offense happened. And remember here, they didn't charge domestic violence against the spouse here. Like that's not one of the charged offenses. And the analysis would probably be a lot different if it was. But you had to connect it to the wrongfulness of the communicating a threat because they're not doing anything with the suffocation of the child because he wasn't convicted of that, A. And B, it's really hard to connect it in that form or fashion anyway. So here, that's what Judge Johnson is explaining, that the fact that he's threatening and intimidating her later, shutting off the power, shutting off the utilities, telling her he's going to hit her, that makes it to show like that's his plan. It's his common scheme. He's using that to control her or to prevent her from reporting in the future. And that's where it's connected.
And Judge Johnson says that while the military judge in the trial case did not actually say that their reasoning was implicit, that this was what they were going towards, was to the serious attempts to intimidate her, not just the idle banter, the wrongfulness of the threats.
Right, because the burden's on the government to show this, and they have to show three things in a Reynolds. It's one, it happened, that the other act happened. Two, that it's relevant for that non-propensity purpose. And three, they have to overcome a 403 balancing test, that it's not, the probative value of the evidence not substantially outweighed by the unfair prejudice to the accused. Typically, we're dealing with unfair prejudice. And two is what's at issue in part 3A of the opinion, is how is it relevant? That common planner scheme has been really expanded by recent case law, and we'll see the concurring opinion struggle with that. But Judge Johnson kind of hits the nail on the head, and she talks about Hippolyte. So United States versus Hippolyte is one of the last big pronouncements on common planner scheme by the CAF. It's a 2019 opinion. And she talks about it not having to be identical misconduct. It has to be somewhat related by shared common factors, is the idea that comes from Hippolyte. Because in Hippolyte, if you've read that opinion before, remember, it's a sexual assault case where the accused sexually assaulted, well, abused sexual contact against three victims and a sexual assault against a fourth victim, where all four of the male victims had drank to excess, went back to the barracks room with the accused, and that's when he committed the misconduct. And while those weren't identical, especially the fourth one in Hippolyte, they talked about these shared common factors being enough to articulate common planner scheme. And that's where she's really driving this analysis. But again, this is not the majority of the opinion, the majority part of the opinion. The majority opinion comes from part 3B. So because this was objected to evidence, it's reviewed for by an abuse of discretion. And if the evidence came in wrong, like in a wrongful manner, the accused would still have to show, the appellant would still have to show prejudice on appeal. And here, and I don't remember if you went over this in the facts, but the victim and the spouse in this case, like, recorded him making the threat to her. And they're like, hey, even if this evidence came in wrongfully, I mean, he basically committed the crime on an audio recording. And it's real hard to overcome that and to show prejudice, that anything prejudiced you otherwise. It'd be like being on video shooting someone and be like, oh, this other wrong evidence that came in. Like, who really cares? Like, you're on video shooting the person. So there's really nothing that could have overcome that during your trial.
And all the judges agree that there is no prejudice.
Yeah, that part's 5-0. Like, they're all steadfast in that. So ultimately, conviction stays. The concurring opinions get interesting. So Judge Olson writes a short concurring opinion, basically being like, we could have resolved this on prejudice, writes one paragraph, I agree it wasn't prejudice, kind of ends it there. Judge Sparks takes a different approach on the Reynolds analysis and talks about the role that that third prong in 403 should play in judge alone cases. You want to talk about that a bit, Alex?
Well, I think we should talk about Hardy first, because okay. Sparks does agree a little bit with Hardy. Hardy goes a little farther into discussing the issues with the common planner scheme, and then we can go back to Judge Sparks. But Judge Hardy talks a lot about how he agrees that there's no prejudice, but he has concerns with the broad interpretation that the court has taken with the scope of the MRE 404B2 exception, allowing the admission of otherwise inadmissible evidence for the purpose of proving a common scheme or plan. He essentially is talking about the difference between an impermissible use of demonstrating propensity and the admission of evidence to prove a common scheme, and that how the court has kind of muddied the waters there, I think is a fair way to say it. And that there is difficulty in determining the distinction between the two. And he cites Hippolyte, but in a way that says the court has created this precedent where common factors alone are getting common scheme or plan, where while he agrees there doesn't need to be an identicalness between, or doesn't the alleged the uncharged conduct and the charge does not need to be identical, it needs to have more than common factors.
Yeah, because the fear here is that you're using this evidence that's common scheme or plan, and you're saying, like, you're doing the thing that propensity is otherwise not, you're not allowed to do with propensity. Be like, this is a bad dude or a bad female, and like, you should convict them for that purpose alone. It's funny, if you read Hippolyte, Judge Olson basically says that in his dissent. He's like, this is just propensity by a different name.
And I think Judge Hardy really talks about, to the casual observer reading the facts, and we only have what has been presented in the case, there seems to be less purposeful goal of a plan and more just a short temper and how he reacts to his wife when the appellant is frustrated or angry. There seems to be very little connection between an overarching grand plan and just his short temper.
No, I agree. Bad dude, did bad things, should convict. I mean, the evil that propensity is trying to avoid happening.
And that's essentially what Judge Hattie says. And that's what Judge Sparks is commenting on, that he agrees that the court should reconsider the precedent they have set on the very liberal take for common plan or scheme evidence to be admissible under 404B.
Yeah, it's going to take the right case, though. Like, you need a case where there's actual prejudice, because the court has shown again and again when they can decide a case on prejudice alone, like, they'll do that. And here, where you have a case where there's, like, pretty obvious guilt because they committed the crime on audio recording, it's hard to show that prejudice. So maybe when the right case pops up, the court will revisit the precedent with Hippolyte.
Yes. And Judge Sparks agrees that he implores the court to remain open to reconsideration. But he also talks a lot about the 403 balancing test. And so when I talked about in the facts, I said that the judge basically just said it was not an unfair prejudice and that's it. Did not put any additional facts on the record. And what does Judge Sparks say about that?
So remember, in part three of the Reynolds analysis, you have to determine whether or not the probative value of the evidence is substantially outweighed by the unfair prejudice to the accused. And that's a test that has to be done. The reason we do that is because we don't want unfairly prejudicial evidence in front of the fact finder. And Judge Sparks is like, okay, well, that's a valid concern in a panel case when we're not trusting them to know the law and weigh the case, weigh the evidence in an appropriate manner, except for what the judge is telling you. This was a military judge alone case. And Judge Sparks is like, the judges know the law. They know the appropriate weight and deference to give to the evidence in front of them. Why are we even requiring this third part of Reynolds when it comes to a military judge alone case? So he advocates for just eliminating the third prong of Reynolds when it's a military judge alone case.
He talks about how the trial court said it no less than three times, that they were only going to consider this for the limited purpose upon which it's been admitted, and that enough shows what they're going, that they are following essentially the rules, and that, as Major Morgan said, 403 is to prevent inflaming the passions of service members upon hearing prejudicial evidence. There's no such issue or concern with a military judge.
Yeah, interesting thought. I mean, there's a lot of case law about the difference between military judge alone and panel cases, and I think that just continues that line. But we'll see in the future if this issue comes up again. But interesting thought by Judge Sparks here. Okay, so for the field. So what should you guys be doing with this? Because it doesn't play like a big role in shaping.
Well, before we get to the field, sorry, I just want to talk a little bit. The court really kicks this, but just for the field, when we're talking about that, is what do you say about the temporal aspect of it, that it's 17 months later?
Yeah, that's a good point. So they don't seem to bristle at that much, like the fact that it comes afterwards. Like, it's interesting, like the 404B doesn't say other acts previous to the charge misconduct. It just says other acts. So it's not, there's no bright line rule against acts that come afterwards. So I think that they're good to go for the future. I mean, there's no bar on it, either in the plain language of the president's implementation of the military rules of evidence or here in the opinion today. So I think that that's fine, but just you better be ready to connect it to a non-propensity purpose.
I think that's the takeaway. But I do, the Judge Johnson says, you know, it's 404B is just other acts. It's not other prior acts. And so good to go, but I think there's things the government could have done a little different here to prevent this from happening.
Yeah, I think had there been domestic violence charged in this case, it's very different. But I mean, we don't know why they didn't charge it. Like, I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback it, but I think that had it been charged, it'd be different.
And I think understanding they're 3 weeks from trial, maybe there were issues of not wanting to add additional charges.
Yep.
But I think that also there was clearly, in a very short amount of time, very serious threats or actions of domestic violence that could have just been charged.
Yep. Okay, so for the field, so what are you guys supposed to do with this? Well, as defense counsel, you object to this evidence coming in, because properly used 404B evidence, if you're looking at the instruction in the bench book and if you argue it correctly, is going to be very hard to overcome for your client. So do the job that the defense counsel did here and fight it and set up this issue for appeal if you lose. For government counsel, you got to connect the dots. Like, you got to be able to show, like, this is a non-propensity purpose that I'm using it for.
And to the charged offenses.
Exactly, to the charged offenses.
Yes.
And I think a lot of practitioners are afraid, and I hear this again from the field time and time again, to show their cards. If you're a government counsel, show your cards. Show your cards. Like, Your Honor, this is what I plan to argue at trial. This is how I plan to link in this 404 evidence. This is why I'm not using a propensity purpose. Like, give a spoiler alert to what your closing argument's going to be, even, because that's where it's, like, really useful, is in closing argument. The evidence isn't going to change, government counsel. Like, you don't hold anything to your chest. Just, like, let it all out here and show the judge what you're going to do.
I agree. And I think in this opinion, they do write portions of the government's closing, and they did mention it, but really did not hop on it. It wasn't a huge part of their case. And so obviously there was no prejudice here, but in case there was, this was not something that was super, they had the threat on video, on recording.
Yeah.
And so this is something, again, not to lose the war in the middle of trial, but they really did a good job, I thought, of arguing it on closing, not arguing propensity. But that's something you could absolutely tell the court while you're in motions hearing to show what you're going to be using this evidence for.
The other thing is to be careful of common plan or scheme. The CAF has shown here in this opinion, like, hey, guys, we're not going to let you just walk all over this exception that we've driven into 404B. When I talk to practitioners about this, when I'm talking to the OBC or I'm talking to the grad course, I use the example of the Wet Bandits from Home Alone. For our listeners a little bit younger, this is a movie from the 1990s. Go back, educate yourself. The classic, they used to flood the houses that they would rob. Like, that's a pretty common plan or scheme. Like, that's what they would do. That's why they're called the Wet Bandits. So it's a good example of that. So I think that you need to be able to show, like, you're not just using propensity by another name and show what the common plan or scheme was.
But for, in terms of precedent, we have it's not prejudicial.
That's right. It's not prejudicial, which is, we end up with that a lot because, I mean, the burden is on the appellant to show prejudice and they just weren't able to do so here.
Well, great. Thank you so much. This is Major Morgan's last podcast before he goes out into the field into the Trial Defense Service up at Fort Drum. We want to thank Major Morgan. I probably won't miss him, but I will miss his intellect. And it's unfortunate that he's so smart, but I know that he has helped the field and that people like listening to him.
I guess. I don't know if that's true or not.
Maybe not like, but they appreciate it after the fact.
They tolerate it, maybe.
They tolerate it. But I know that he's been super helpful to the field, and I know he's about to go and do great things on the defense service side, so we want to thank him here at the school.
Well, thanks, as always, for listening. Look forward to the next episode. And as always, call us with any questions or concerns.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General's or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. The court will stand in recess until further order of the court.